1017, the Steve Sutton Show, KCMO Talk Radio, 103.7 FM and AM 710. Pat Dijakovic, Duke to his friends, and I'm one of them, is KCFD. He's a battalion chief with four stores downtown, and he is the head of the AFL-CIO Missouri, the president of the AFL-CIO Missouri. What are the four houses you're in charge of downtown?
I've got Station 17, that's at 34th and Paseo, and then I've got Station 19, which is in Westport, right next to St. Luke's. I've got Station 29 at 63rd and Paseo, and then Station 37, which is at 77th and Warnell.
So you are the busy season.
It is
all the
busy.
Time.
We've got a large geographical area. My battalion is 106, and we run 31st Street to 75th, state line to Troost. So I've got the richest of the rich and the poorest of the poor.
And I'm going to take a wild guess from my cop days and say 80% of what you run is medical.
Yes, more than 80 by now, I'm sure, but yes.
It just, you know, as a deputy sheriff, I learned quickly, fire's always first on at the wreck, the shooting, the stabbing.
Right.
You guys are always the first guys there, and because you're close and you're always ready to go. We all had that firefighter thing in us when we were kids. We all wanted to be firemen.
Well, sure, just most of us grew up.
Yeah, but you didn't, so how'd that work?
I absolutely love it. I love the fact that, you know, it's at its core extremely simple. If the door's a problem, you destroy the door. If the window's the problem, you destroy the window. You go in there and it's brute force and it's whatever it takes, as much as it takes, all the time, nonstop. And that just appeals to me. Plus helping people out, the 24-hour shift, 48 off, and the people you get to meet. It's just fantastic. It's been a fantastic career for me. I really loved it.
27 years.
Yeah, 20 coming up, 28 in December.
Did you ever think about quitting, getting out?
I think I might be. You need 25 in to retire, and I'm starting to think I might be really close to doing that. So,
how old are you?
I am 51.
You're still young enough to do it. It's a young man's game. I mean, you know, the younger men and women that do it can still run, and they can still. And that's when I learned I couldn't, when I couldn't run one day. That was my epiphany, okay?
Yeah, well, you know, I'll let you in on a secret. So we get back to the station. You don't want any of the kids to see it, but you go to the locker and pull out the ibuprofen when they're not looking. And they tend to bounce back and heal a little bit quicker than we do. So, yeah, it's definitely for young people. We've got good young people.
How did you become the president of AFL-CIO Missouri? Did a mob don call you into his office one day and – You know, in his office in the back of the nightclub.
Right. The smoke-filled room, we kind of backroom deal. No, that would have been really great if it had been that that simple and straightforward because the way it actually happened. So I was a Kansas City firefighter, and I got promoted to the rank of battalion chief. Now, the history of the Kansas City Fire Department, battalion chiefs are considered supervisors. And so back at some point in the history, in the 50s, the battalion chiefs were in Local 42, the Union. And so what, depending on what side you believe, either the battalion chiefs got out, but more likely the Union gave up representing the battalion chiefs in order to probably get a raise back in those days. So the battalion chiefs were out of the Union. They were called supervisors. And so by definition, supervisors are not allowed to be in a union. When that happened, they were unrepresented. And during that period of time, what happens with a group of employees who don't have any rules as to who's going to get what promotions or what raises, there was some infighting. People who were well-liked received three-step raises in 1 year. People who were not liked received zero for 3 years solid. And so there was a young battalion chief who thought that was wrong, and he wanted to join a union. And he tried to form a union. The city said he couldn't, so he sued the city and said, look, we command fires. We manage the people that are out there, but we're not management. We supervise them. We don't hire and fire. We don't discipline people. We write them up, and somebody else determines whether they get suspended or terminated.
Duke is the head of the AFL-CIO, Missouri, and a battalion chief, KCFD, a good friend of mine. And how is dealing with the city? Is City Hall just on acid, or how does it work?
You know, the people, the elected officials at City Hall are, for the most part, really good, smart and hardworking people who want to do the right thing. A lot of times we disagree about what exactly the right thing is or how to do the right thing, but for the most part. But the problem that I have, and pretty much everybody who has to deal with City Hall, I attribute to the form of government, Right now, we do not have a strong mayor form of government in Kansas City. We have a mayor council form of government. We don't have the strong mayor form of government. So what that does is there are basically 12 city council people plus the mayor mm-hmm. plus the city manager. So there are 14 people there that you need to go talk to every time you need to get something done. The big issue is you run to the city manager, then you got to go talk to the mayor, individual city council people, and at any time, if you don't have the right number of people, it's going to be a problem. I mean, you look at the city manager. He has 13 bosses, each equally. You know, I mean, it's worked out so great with the Catholic Church having 13 popes and the United States having 13 presidents that, you know, there is a downside to a strong mayor form of government. I got to tell you that. If you get a bad mayor, he's got a lot of power and can wreck a lot of stuff quickly. So,
well, how is the city at keeping its word?
The city has been, for the most part, pretty good about keeping their word. Occasionally what we'll have is we have some issues where we'll have changes in the city council and previous deals aren't followed through on. We have a couple of different problems with who we negotiate contracts with in the city. We have problems with some of the development, some of the deals that are supposed to be paying prevailing wage that it's been argued that they're not prevailing wage jobs. So as a whole, the people in the city hall are good for keeping their words, but the city as a whole, we have a lot of issues with that.
In your capacity with KCFD, the 27 years, a very fulfilling job, as we discussed before, you see a lot of terrible things. If you could change one thing in this town, what would it be?
Oh, wow. Yeah, there are a lot of terrible things. And we just heard about the tragedy today, the shooting today.
God, geez.
And it's just terrible. Look, I've got a concealed carry permit. I shoot guns. I enjoy them. There's no doubt about that.
I do, too. Yeah.
So, but I think that when we see 4, 5, 6, and 8-year-old children being shot and killed in Kansas City, my God, we got to do something about that. That's just got to stop. The horrible gun violence in this city has just absolutely got to stop. And I occasionally think maybe if we dressed them up like little lions, somebody would care. You know, there would be this national outrage about it. But when a 6-year-old gets shot and killed, that's incredible.
And you're the first guy there.
Yeah.
And you block it out of your head and just do what you're trained.
You know, you do. You do on the scene. Without a doubt, you do. It bothers you later. And, you know, early on when you're very young and you haven't been exposed to it a lot, it's really problematic. Then later on, just after usually a couple of years, when you have children, boy, that's when it really, really gets to you and really hurts. And, you know, you have to tell the new kids coming on, look, it's okay to go home and hug your kids and cry. It just happens.
Do the men and women of KCFD just, after the last one hit the wall and stopped, do people retire then? Do they give it up?
You know, there are different things that cause people to retire. And, you know, a lot of times when we suffer a loss within our ranks, that's going to drive some people to say, that's it, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. You know, the young battalion chief who formed Local 3808, which I was talking about and I became the president of, he got killed in a warehouse fire in December of 99. Tragic. Smartest guy I knew. And, you know, the color went out of the world for a couple of years. Things just weren't fun. But that's the guy who started the local. And so we felt like we had to carry it on. But there were people after that that said, you know what, I'm done. I'm gonna get out of here.
Pat is known as Duke to his buddies, and he is KCFD battalion chief and the head of the AFL-CIO Missouri, Steve Sutton Show, Talk Radio KCMO. And Pat, what, you're IAFF, right?
Correct.
All right, so what advantages do firefighters have now that they didn't have under the union?
Well, prior to the union, a lot of what the unions do that nobody sees, absolutely nobody knows about, are the safety issues and trying to keep workers safe. I mean, everybody knows we negotiate contracts and we talk about pay and benefits, but the safety is the biggest thing. The International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, when it first started, it started at a World's Fair, and I believe it was 12 men came together to start the IBEW. 1 year later, they met again, and half of the leadership had been electrocuted. and one of the leaders in developing the safety that keeps the IBEW workers safe today was done by the union, the International Association of Firefighters. We were getting burnt. Firefighters were getting burnt on their legs because all we had was the rubber boots and the coat and the helmet. And the IAFF and local unions demanded that we start wearing bunker gear, the bunker pants you see now. And we've seen dramatic decreases in the number of burns from that.
And those are Nomex. They're fire retardant. They give you a fighting chance.
Correct. They do. They keep the heat out. Eventually everything will get saturated with heat, but they keep it out long enough that hopefully we can get in there deep enough and get it out and knock it down. Kansas City is an aggressive interior attack fire department. The only way to put a fire out is to go in as deep as you can to the fire and hit it.
Guys aren't afraid of a collapse?
You think about it, yes. We constantly watch for signs of collapse, and it depends. You know, we'll risk a little for a lot, but we're not going to risk a lot for nothing.
Because there are fire departments that just will stand at the door and look at the building and not go in. And
that's not us.
That happened to my home in 2009. I watched that happen. That was just unbelievable. The last time you weighed all that junk you wore to a fire, the O2 bottle, everything, what did it weigh?
It was 84 pounds.
No.
84 pounds is what we put on. And so, so if you're a big guy and you're tipping the scales at 2 1/4, by the time you're walking on those stairs that are on fire, you're over 300 pounds, and that is a lot of weight to ask the stairs to hold up to.
Holy smoking, women tote that stuff.
Yes, we have several women on the fire department. I've had the honor of working with a lot of women on the fire department.
How much did that stuff weigh?
84 pounds.
84 pounds. That's going to be the O2 bottle, the mask, the helmet, the gear. How much did the coat and pants weigh?
I would guess that was probably about 15 or 18 pounds of it. It's just the coat and the pants and the boots.
And they really are quite the sauna, even on a cold day, aren't they?
Oh, yes. They are very, very good at keeping heat in as well as keeping heat out. And then throw into the factor that some of the fires are up 14, 15 stories. And remember, don't take the elevator in the fire. Use the stairs. So, right.
You've got a key. I see that in the elevator
We may cheat a little bit occasionally, yeah, depending on what it is, but yes.
Yeah. Duke, you're an amazing guy, and we're going to hold you over. We're going to keep you through the break, as a matter of fact. Duke is battalion chief, KCFD. He is the president of the AFL-CIO Missouri. And he's going to join us on the other side of this news update from Dennis Rooney and then CBS. And we'll be right back to you with the Steve Sutton Show on KCMO. Steve Sutton Show, KCMO Talk Radio, 103.7 FM, AM 710. Pat, pronounce your last name.
All right. It is Djokovic, but don't worry about it, Steve. It took me about 3 years to learn how to say it.
We're never going to get all that on the back of the jersey.
Yeah, I know.
That is never going to happen.
That's not going to work, right?
But to his friends, he's Duke, and I'm one of his friends. He is the head of the AFL-CIO Kansas City. He's a battalion chief, KCFD, 27 years on the job, and this is quite a time to be in labor in Missouri, isn't it?
Oh, wow, yeah. There is a lot going on, and there are a lot of moving pieces right about now.
You know, it started a couple of months ago. Vicki Hale and UAW 31 and GM Fairfax. And have you heard anything about that?
No, not yet.
They are all bunkered up. You call over there, nobody will pick up a phone, either place, the plant or the union. And they're all keeping a way big lid on that. That's the local one. And then in the fall, they go into the international.
Right.
Which for the first time, two women will be negotiating the agreement.
UAW 249, the Ford plant in Clay Como, their president, Jeff Wright, he's in Detroit now also. So, yeah, we've got Kansas City has a major national influence in the labor market.
You're not kidding. That Fairfax plant pumps $430 million into the economy of the town. And I have to imagine the Ford plant, the F-150s, are similar, if not close. But here comes a time where you're going to fight for your existence. This is the question is right to work.
Yeah, right to work is the big one right now. Right to work is the one that keeps coming up and continues just to not ever be settled. Part of the problem with the right to work, and so, you know, it's kind of quickly to give you my take on it. So the basic idea is you have a right to be in a union, and right to work takes away the right to be in a union where everybody pays and everybody gets the benefit.
It's right to work is neither. It is one of those incredibly clever phrases like peacekeeper missile.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it just you can watch it fight with itself. You guys have started up your TV. I've seen the billboards too.
Right. And you know, the problem we have basically, so the function of any organization, no matter what it is, whether it's a government, whether it is a union, whatever it is to provide things for the members that the members can't get on their own. So you can't have your own military. You can't have your own roads and highways. And so the government has to provide those things for you. Members cannot negotiate their own contracts. They cannot file their own grievances. They can't represent the entire group. So the union has to do that. And regardless of whether they're talking about government or a union, somebody has to pay for those services. And with government, it's taxes, and everybody pays, except for the extremely poor who can't, and they get a pass. But in the union, everybody pays dues. Sometimes we get people on hardship, and we'll give them a waiver for a while until something, you know, if they have some tragedy in their life. But everybody pays. And what right to work basically does is just makes taxes voluntary. So you can imagine how much trash would be picked up and streets would be clean if people could decide whether or not they wanted to pay their taxes.
Wow. Now, I'm thinking of it in a historical context. Organized labor eliminated child labor.
Yes.
Got the 40-hour work week in, which has kind of gone away with the advent of making everybody a manager.
Right.
It set the floor, and the floor really needs to be set, because every time the floor comes up, the ceiling goes up. And there's more open road for everybody. What is the other side arguing?
Well, the other side is arguing varying things. As usually happens, there is a lot of discussion from the other side that says things that are direct opposites. It says it's better for the workers and you'll make more money. And also it'll draw business here because our wages will be lower. Well, again, your peacekeeper missile analogy works perfectly with this. I do not understand how you can say it is going to be better for you, but it's also going to benefit your employer by costing him less because they're not going to have to pay you nearly as much. You know, and whenever we talk about this, they always say, well, where jobs will come, businesses will come. And it never works out that way.
And it never ever does. I mean, you and I have lived through three presidents that are for trade agreements that just make your eyes go back in your head. And it started with Clinton and NAFTA. And rarely do you find a bill where, like that, that some Democrats vote for it and a lot of Republicans vote against it. People were very, very split on the concept of sending American jobs overseas. Sending American jobs overseas is unpatriotic. It's counterproductive. We need more people working to buy more American goods, don't we, Duke?
Yeah, we definitely do. Listen, you know, that we started out, this country started out, colonial America, pre-colonial America. It was an agrarian society, and we were sustaining and slowly growing. And we grew food, hunter-gatherers, built what they could, continued moving. Then we went into a great big industrial revolution and started making things, and they forged steel railroad tracks and built trains and built all this stuff, and everything was made here. And now I see a shift where we're becoming more of a service-oriented country. And I'm going to tell you, we are not going to be able to survive or do anything or grow if we deliver pizzas to one another and answer tech support lines for each other. We have got to build something in this country. We have to make things here.
Good for you, man. Do you realize that at the turn of the century, the Industrial Revolution, there were members of Congress that were so afraid robber barons were taking over the country, Rockefeller, Vanderbilt, and the like, that they instituted legislation that was almost the start of organized labor. They were Republicans.
Right.
Republicans instituted the estate tax in 1916 because they were afraid robber barons, the big families, the big industrials, were taking over the country. See a parallel now?
Yeah, we're continuing to see literally attacks on working people. The middle class is constantly under attack. They are facing lower wages. You know, we look at the economic recovery, okay? Take the last 2 days out, the stock market jitters that went on, the drop, the rise, the drop again, all of that out. But from the recession we were at, we're starting to see an increase. The economy is coming back. Companies are doing better. Companies are posting more and more profits. We're seeing Ford posting billions of dollars in profits per year. But the auto workers at the Ford factory in Clay Como are not seeing increases in their wages. When Ford lost jobs, they lost $28 an hour jobs. And then when they got jobs back, now that you've heard there's been a big hiring crush at Ford, they're at $14 an hour. Right?
And they and their brethren at Fairfax, through the last two cycles of negotiation, had a lot of givebacks, a lot of give-ups, and now both companies are flush.
Right. Almost every union that I know of made concessions during the economic downturn, and we have yet to see those concessions be paid back yet. And a part of it, you know, I heard that UAW and Ford negotiations, that Ford had kind of maybe thinly veiled threat that they were going to do more outsourcing. And we're talking about free trade agreements. So if you look at the history of the free trade within the country, just start within a country. So if you've ever had a steak from Florida or go to a Missouri winery or try to get citrus here, you know, each region of the country has a God-given gift. And, you know, you get sugar cane, we can grow cows, wheat, whatever you've got precious metals or steel. So what free trade was designed to do was to allow people who lived in a certain geographical region to be able to trade freely so that nobody had a monopoly. We could do it. So if you look at the God-given resources of the different areas of the country and you expand that out into the world, so we've got timber. We've got all kinds of things. We don't have oil. Never, never, ever did anybody think that a country's citizens' willingness to work for poverty wages would be a God-given resource.
We've had three presidents in a row who like stand in front of the camera and say, the American worker can compete with any worker anywhere in the world. And that's not true. You can't compete with a guy that makes a dollar a day.
Well, we can't compete also because we have safety regulations here. We have requirements that people have insurance.
Yeah, chances are when the day's over, you'll go home in one piece. Yeah.
Correct. And well, and we're not allowed to pollute here. I mean, companies aren't allowed to pollute here. And, you know, if the playing field was leveled around the world, then if we don't get jobs, man, shame on us. But we've got a distinct disadvantage when their government allows them to pollute as much as they want.
Duke is a Kansas City firefighter. He's a battalion chief downtown. He's also the head of the Kansas City AFL-CIO. Minimum wage dominates the headlines. What's your thought on that here locally?
Yeah, we've got minimum wage here locally in Kansas City. It's just a mess, and it's one of those things that I've been talking about, that there are a lot of moving pieces going on here. I will try to give you the most concise rundown I can of minimum wage in Kansas City, and it's going to be a mess. So this all started when a group of people wanted to increase the turnout in city elections, and I believe probably to benefit someone that they wanted to be elected. So a petition initiative was started. Enough signatures were gathered, because the threshold for signatures is pretty low, to move the city to $15 an hour. Now, whenever you do a petition initiative, you fill out the paperwork and say, this is what I want to get put on the ballot, and you fill out usually four people who are called the petitioners, and they represent everybody who signs. And so you go out and you get your signatures, and then you submit it. Signatures are verified. Then the city council can do several things. They can pass the law that you want right away. They can put it on a ballot, the vote of the people, or they can reject it. Now, if they reject it, the petitioners can force it to go to the ballot pretty simply. So the petitioners can also withdraw it. Now, knowing that all these things can go, so the city reacted to this by bringing together a group of people to try to negotiate some type of agreement. That group got together, and it were representatives from the hotel, from restaurants, from fast food, from unions, from the community, from the faith community, from just throughout. And it became evident to me after about 12 minutes that nothing was going to be able to be negotiated. Some of those members left that meeting and never came back, usually those representing interest from the industry. But more to the point. So a kind of agreement was reached, a negotiated deal through there, that the petitioners would withdraw the petition and the city would pass a minimum wage ordinance that made sense and worked better for everyone, and that that would go out without a vote of the people. So the city council passed $13 an hour by 2020. That is the plan. Then the petitioners have now came back with the $15 an hour, and they want that on the ballot. So that's going to go to the ballot. And then the other side, the hotel and restaurant associations, have started a petition to repeal the $13 an hour, which is probably going to be on the ballot. And then also the House, Jefferson City, they like to pass really stupid laws. And sometimes
they can pass everything but an intern.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Yeah. But they wanted a law. And it's not surprising that the Plastic Bag Trade Association did not want any city in Missouri to ban plastic bags.
I'm just watching all the moving parts. Go on.
Oh, it gets better. Yes. Yeah, so they didn't want anybody to ban plastic bags. Now, cities that pick up the trash have a vested interest in what kind of trash is generated in their city. Arguably, plastic bags can be an environmental nightmare, depending on what you think, whether cities should have the right to ban plastic bags being used in the store. So they were getting ready to pass that. The plastic bag industry had spent a lot of money on lobbyists to get that on there when someone said, hey, you know what? Cities also shouldn't pass minimum wage ordinances. And so they tacked that one on there in an amendment. And then the third amendment came and said, well, we don't want cities passing any employment benefits at all, where they say like paid maternity leave or sick leave or any of that. So they put that in there too. This caused huge problems because not only were we talking about bags now, and something nobody has brought up yet in all of these discussions is that the firefighters ordinance, the electricians ordinance, and the Independence Power and Light, all those things are done by ordinance. Those contracts are ordinances. They're laws, the employment benefits. So the governor vetoed those known as House Bill 722. He vetoed 722, but now there's an override session of veto coming in September. There is already a law on the books in the state of Missouri saying cities can't pass minimum wage, and I've talked to about six different lawyers, and I've got six different legal opinions on what happens to Kansas City's minimum wage if the veto is sustained, if the veto is overturned of 722, and then, of course, the lawsuit. I don't think we're going to see this settled until 2020, to be honest with you.
What do you predict the number to be? What will it come to? Listen, I get the idea. You're a pedestrian in this. It's like a tennis match. Your head's going back and forth.
I am watching back and forth. Listen, I am a proponent of raising minimum wage. I honest to God believe minimum wage needs to go up. It needs to go up everywhere. But I think that we're probably going to end up somewhere around 10 or 12, but it's going to have to be done on a state level. I've got a lot of issues, and this is not really popular with a lot of my friends who I deal with. $15 an hour causes me problems. If the minimum wage were to go to $15 an hour tomorrow, all right, starting firefighter pay in Kansas City, Missouri, it's about $13 an hour. If all those junior guys get $2 an hour, then what kind of chance am I going to have to be able to negotiate raises for more senior members, health insurance, pension benefits, anything at all, even to fight the rising cost of health insurance because we've had to give all the junior guys $15 an hour? And so there are a lot of problems with immediately going to $15 an hour, with going to $15 an hour. So my guess is 10.
As always, it winds out somewhere in the middle. There's all this posturing. Everybody's fighting for camera time. And speaking of camera time, there's now a manhunt in Virginia for the guy who capped those two kids who were doing the stand-upper for the Roanoke television station this morning. The thought was that they would be in custody an hour ago, and apparently that is not the case. A terrible thing happened, and, you know.
Did you say there's a manhunt going on?
Yeah.
I thought they were in pursuit. I thought they were.
That was the report, and there's no aerial here because, as we noted at the top of the show, I know that neck of the woods. And if you're a news director and your helicopter comes in from doing traffic that morning, it's got to refuel and tool up, and then you heat it up, spool it up, get it to the other side of Virginia, from the Potomac to coal country, and that's 45 minutes or 40, and I guess by then all the chasing was over, but they've geared up a manhunt from this guy. Steve Sutton Show on KCMO. We're in here with Duke, who is a KCFD battalion chief and the head of the AFL-CIO in Kansas City. We're gonna keep you through the break and hold you and finish out the hour with you because this has been great. KCMOTalkRadio.com is where we happen on your computer. We'll be back right after this. Once again, the manhunt for Vester Lee Flanagan, a 41-year-old man who shot a reporter and a cameraman on camera during a stand-upper in Roanoke, Virginia today, continues in southwest Virginia. That's coal country. It's very rough. It is the kind of terrain that Eric Robert Rudolph hid out in for years. If he knows his way around there, and he's from there, and he might be very hard to find. I know it's confusing. I know Virginia police said they were closing in on him and about to effect a custody an hour ago, and that is not the case. They are looking for him now. A third victim of the shooting, Vicki Gardner, who was the subject of the interview. She was the interviewee, is in surgery fighting for her life, and we will keep you updated on KCMO as there are more developments. Steve Sutton Show, KCMO. Duke, we've got a couple of minutes left. Duke is the head of the AFL-CIO Kansas City. He's a 27-year KCFD firefighter and a battalion chief. And when is the election? When do we vote on right to work?
Actually, we are not going to get a chance to vote on right to work.
Oh.
The people who support right to work realize that if they were to put that on the ballot, that would drive voter turnout that would likely vote Democrat. And the people pushing right to work are the Republican side. And so they don't want that on the ballot.
Well, that's why I intentionally asked that question.
Yeah, I know. You're a smart guy. You know, the people who think that right to work is the right thing to do and that unions are bad, I just got a couple of questions. First and foremost, if right to work is so fantastic, then why don't we just ask Kansas, Mississippi, Louisiana, or Arkansas to just give us a little bit of money? I mean, they've got to have tons of it because they've been right to work forever, and so there must be lots and lots of money in those states. And then the second thing is I have heard some people tell me that they think that unions were at one point a good thing, but that they're not necessary anymore or they don't need them. It's not for them. And the question I want to ask them is, if just think of any movie star, anybody you've seen on TV, heard on the radio for the most part, anybody who's played any professional sport that you're familiar with, if a union is good for all of those people, because every one of those people are in a union.
I'm a member of the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists.
Exactly.
Vested in the pension fund. I know I don't look old enough, but the check comes every month. The union health plan has saved my life more than once, twice, as a matter of fact. There's probably nothing wrong with a living wage, safety, and a back end to your life. And that is something everybody should consider as we go onward through the fog. Duke, it's a pleasure. I'm glad you came in, man. I'm glad you invited me to the meeting the other night. I'm glad I got a chance to meet all the working people that head the various trade unions in Kansas City. Steve Sutton Show, KCMO. We pause here at the top of the hour for a CBS News update, and we'll be back with you on the other side.